back to Hitch Route. Week 3 is in the books, and dare I say, I was wrong. It was far more interesting than I thought it would be.
Yes, dare I say, we were wrong. Namely, I think you and I literally had the worst week of picks we've ever had in the history of the Hitch Route podcast. I'm not joking.
It might just be that bad. I definitely have to go back and look into it. But I was the winner, and I only chose half the games correctly.
You see, this is what happens when you shirk your kneecap soup. This is what happens when you don't get all of those kneecap soup nutrients from King. You don't think clearly when you make your NFL picks.
You know, I think there's a lot to be said about consuming your daily kneecap soup. But not enough is said about the fact that it needs to be consumed hot. Because I think that the Lions consumed a very cold bowl at the end of their game.
Indeed. Indeed they did. Yeah. Yeah, what a tough finish for Dan Campbell's squad. But that said, another interesting week where, depending on the game, in fact, I think only two teams broke 30 over the weekend. You know, it was another overall very strong defensive weekend. I mean, we certainly saw that on display with the Bucs-Packers and then the Sunday Night Football game, both of which we'll get into. But honestly, I thought defense won the week. I thought they won the week in week one, and then they kind of ceded that to the offense last week. But then defense reclaimed the throne in week three.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess the question, though, is it really defense, or is it more often than not, maybe it's just bad offense?
I mean, it could be bad offense, too. I mean, when you boil it down, there's really only two ways to stop a team in 2022. There, you know, you have a pass rush, which is so disruptive that the quarterback can't even get through their progressions, or the offense self-destructs because they shoot themselves in the foot. And I feel like we saw a pretty nice mix of both over the weekend, if I'm being quite honest.
It's true. And we also saw plenty of good offensive performances that pushed their teams through to victory. Mm. Ultimately, it was a very balanced week in the NFL schedule. And many teams that we didn't think had as good of a shot of winning, they decided that they wanted to prove us wrong. But for the Thursday Night Football game, I don't think that was the case. It seemed pretty simple and according to plan.
Yeah, the Steelers' offense is so limited. They can't run the ball. They can't pass the ball. And when you can't run the ball and you can't pass the ball, what are you? What are you? Are you a team? Are you a legitimate NFL team?
In a legal sense, you still are a team, but I believe that if you go to the water cooler and have a discussion with your fellow NFL players, they would say that they are, in fact, not a team.
I mean, you know, there's got to be something in the contract that says that, like, the team must be able to advance the ball forward either by pounding the rock or by slinging the pigskin. And if you can neither pound the rock nor sling the pigskin, are you an NFL football team?
That's fair.
These are the questions. These are the questions, Pittsburgh, that you must be asking yourself at this moment. Are you a football team? Because I'm not sure if you are.
And honestly, Cleveland, for the gripe we were giving them about being a bad team, they definitely showed good offense on both sides, the run and the pass. Amari Cooper has really emerged.
Yeah,
as a wide out. I mean, he's always been good, but. There was major question marks of how to look with Jacoby Brissett, but the connection's there.
Yeah.
So Cleveland is going to hold down the fort, not handily, but they're going to be a decent-ish team, and then Deshaun Watson comes back.
I mean, if you had told me, or rather, if you had asked me whether the Browns roster was still, you know, a really good roster going into this season, I would have told you that outside of Jacoby Brissett at quarterback, they're still arguably a super team. They've got two great running backs. They've got a great offensive line. They've got, you know, arguably two very, very capable wide receivers. They've got a great secondary, and they have arguably the greatest pass rusher in football. They're a loaded roster. I just did not necessarily expect Jacoby Brissett to be able to carry them to victories, you know, during the first half of the season. But it seems that, you know, he's able to do that. And so, like, I feel like we now need to do a bit of an expectations reset for the Browns. You know, because again, the Steelers defense, even without TJ Watt, that's a very vaunted defense, even still. So, you know, that's a very real victory for them. And so, yeah, I mean, if you're a Browns fan, besides the usual of being a Browns fan, you must be pretty happy right now, all things considered, with what you're seeing.
Yeah, for sure. On to the next game, though. Things at Panthers. This was the game that threw both of us off, along with much of America. Sure.
What do you mean? What do you mean? This is the game that threw both of us off, as if to single this one out.
This is the first chronologically. Actually, I don't even know if that's technically true because Chiefs Colts played at the same time, but this one still stumped me more than Chiefs at Colts.
Chiefs and Colts. What a game, man. What a game.
What a game. And we'll get into that more. But with Saints and Panthers, I don't even know how much of a game it really was. The offense looked pretty bad from the Panthers, and they won handedly. Like, not a single receiver caught more than two footballs from Baker Mayfield. Yet they won, and considering that the Saints scored all 14 points in the fourth quarter, the Panthers were running away with this game.
Yeah. Yeah. That game was not as competitive as the final score appeared. Just a complete butt kicking by the Panthers over their division rival Saints. And hey, you know what? Give them credit. You know, they came to battle and they battled. And that was a game in which just about everyone had written them off. And that's the power of the NFL, man. You know, just this the power of belief, I feel, is just so much. It's just so much different than anything else in any other sport. You know, it doesn't translate into basketball. It doesn't translate into baseball. You know, one of which I would argue is far more driven by stars, and the other of which is primarily driven by pitching and analytics. You know, football is just how much do your guys want it versus how much do my guys want it? And I think it's great. I just think it's one of the very, very best things that the sport of football has going for it. And it's why we just can't get enough of it, in my humble opinion.
I couldn't agree more with that.
Moving on.
Texans at Bears.
Juicy.
For the wrong reasons. Juicy for the wrong reasons. Man, I'm not even sure Justin Fields is a quarterback at the moment. Like, there were some really bad moments there. I'm not going to hide it. I even thought the Texans, I mean, I didn't think with conviction that the Texans would win. I just didn't want to get disappointed over the Bears losing to the Texans at home. So I decided to put on a face and say the Texans are going to win beforehand.
You mean you weren't willing to take the Texans to the bank because you just had unwavering faith in the Houston Texans?
No, I certainly was not. I don't think a single person outside of the Houston metropolitan area could have wavering faith for the Texans.
Much less unwavering.
Most people in that area don't either.
Yes, much less unwavering. Dear Bears, congrats, I guess.
That said, it's truly remarkable that a team can get almost 300 rushing yards in the modern NFL.
That is pretty.
Barely win a football game.
That is pretty sensational. I mean, even the Ravens of 2019 pretty sure they only generated about 3,300 rushing yards for the entire season.
Average around like 200 something.
Right, right. Like nowhere near 300 a game, which is just absolutely, it's absolutely remarkable. There's probably a list of teams you could count on one hand that are such a horrific matchup on the ground against which you could actually have any chance of achieving that.
And the Bears have a really good running game. So just
that they do. That they do. That's the silver lining, man. The Bears running game has been surprisingly potent.
Yeah, that really is the silver lining. We had a phenomenal running game, and that was without our starter, David Montgomery.
Yeah.
Herbert was truly sensational. One of the best performances by a Bears running back since at very least Matt Forte, if not the era of Walter Payton, honestly. I mean, that may be a bit exaggerated. He got 157 yards and two touchdowns, but still a wonderful game. And I'm very excited to see what we do with our backfield moving forward. I'd just like it if Justin Fields wasn't a constant factor in it as much.
Yeah. Honestly, I think the Bears running back tandem of Herbert and Montgomery would be talked about a lot more if the team was just a little bit better. But you know, such is life in the NFL. We only talk about you if you win, because winning is all that matters.
We are undefeated outside of a game at Lambeau.
We are undefeated in 31 other stadiums.
Pretty much.
Beautiful. Watch that be the only two games the Bears lose all year long. Are just both games against the Packers.
You know what? I would hate that, honestly, because I don't think the roster should have a 15-2 record, and I certainly don't want the draft picks that come with it.
What about if the Bears went 15-2, losing only to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in the regular season twice, only to be bounced from the playoffs by Aaron Rodgers and the Packers?
You make it sound so much sweeter. But that's the thing. That's what's going to happen. If we somehow made the playoffs, that's also how our fate would end. It's the only way.
It's the only way, man. It's the only way. But
the Texans did not impress, and they're admittedly not a good team, but they were in it like the whole game still. And we still have so much to fix in the passing offense, and our defense has good aspects of it, but it's definitely weak in outside of our top corner in Jalen Johnson, and Jaquan Brisker is still learning on the move. So the safeties are okay, but that secondary is pretty weak. Our running defense doesn't look good, and we only won because of a last-minute interception by our linebacker, Roquan Smith. So, yeah.
Yeah.
At least we're 2-1. At least we're 2-1.
2-1, man. It's better than most teams can say for themselves at this juncture. The Chiefs at the Colts. I may have said the last game was juicy, but let me just say, this game was even juicier, if I do say so myself.
But you say that a lot. So either the value of juiciness is very diluted after constantly referring to it, or two, maybe I just don't understand what you mean by juicy.
So well, you see, that's the first mistake you made. You made the mistake of assuming that there is any pattern or trend whatsoever to games being juicy versus not. Juiciness is completely subjective. More often than not, I just pull it out of a region which I will not say on our podcast. Juiciness is just something that you feel. It's something that you just watch and you say to yourself, that was juicy. That was a very juicy game of football. And this, Alex, was a juicy football game. I'm not going to lie. There's been a lot of juicy football games so far this season. A lot of them.
What makes this game juicy, though?
What makes this game juicy is that, once again, we had a team that literally everyone wrote off. They were the survivor scapegoat of the week. How could the Chiefs not beat the Colts? I'll tell you how. Because that game was juicy. So juicy, the Colts upset the Chiefs. Matt Ryan's Colts defeated the Kansas City Chiefs. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
I'm not sure how much else there is to be said on that, because they didn't even look great while they did it. Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman were decent, but it was really just the Chiefs being pretty bad.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, pivoting to a more serious tone, you know, once again, you know, the power of desperation in the NFL. I mean, you know, you fall to 0-3, and, you know, we'll get more into this, you know, later on in the pod, but, like, you know, you fall to 0-3, you severely jeopardize your prospects for the entire year. I mean, because it's hard to recover from that. I mean, especially in the AFC. It's one thing to go 0-3 in the NFC, which, you know, if we're being fair, is just a bit down right now compared to the AFC. But the American Football Conference, on the other hand, that's going to be a dogfight, and we all know it. And, you know, if you're dropping three losses in the month of September alone, what gives us the confidence that you're going to stick to less than four losses over the entire remainder of the season? The answer is, I don't know. And the answer which history gives us is that history doesn't know either. History doesn't know the answer to that question. So, good on the Colts. And, man, did they need that win.
Moving on to Bills at Dolphins. Now, this is a game that both of us predicted incorrectly, since, you know, we figured the Bills would win. But at the very least, we know that the Dolphins are a good team, and we didn't think this would be a walk in the park for Buffalo.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a fascinating game. Both teams, both quarterbacks made so many plays in this game. I mean, Josh Allen is a remarkable football talent. I don't give him enough credit sometimes for just how much of a game changer he is. I mean, he's just making it up on the fly at times and finding ways to extend drives. The problem is all the magic left him inside the 20-yard line. I mean, outside of the Bills, you know, two of their very first drives of the game, both of which went for touchdowns, it was some tough sledding for Buffalo. Miami, you know, their pass rush, I got to give them credit. Their pass rush got home in this game, and they made Josh Allen unbelievably uncomfortable for a large portion of regulation. And you know, that was honestly the difference. I mean, you know, Miami had struggles of their own. But at the same time, you know, the both defenses just really showed up, and especially inside the red zone. I was so impressed with both defenses in that game. They both just really came to play, and they showed up situationally when it really mattered. You know, I feel like a growing trend this year is teams moving the ball so freely inside the 20s, or I'm sorry, from 120 to the other 20. But once they get to the 20 and you know, within, that's when they really start to struggle. I think the red zone coaching has gotten so much better over the last few years in the NFL, and this was definitely a game where that showed up. So hats off to both teams. And Mike McDaniel, the new coach of the Dolphins, he's got this team schemed up unbelievably well. So,
yeah, another major coach of the year candidate. I just think that it speaks volumes to the fact that despite a butt punt and passing for less than 200 yards, that the Miami Dolphins still beat the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
Moving on, though. Lions and Vikings. Whip out your Campbell's kneecap soup, ladies and gentlemen. This one was a barn burner.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a good game, man. This is a great game. The Vikings and the Lions have given us some of the best divisional games and, like, some of the most entertaining divisional games, I feel like, you know, within the entire league. It feels like whenever they play, points are scored. And it usually almost always comes down to the final play or two. And just wildly exciting, wildly entertaining.
I didn't think this game would go the way it did, but I was quite impressed by the Detroit Lions to start the game. It's not often that I think that these Lions, actually, I don't even know if that's true anymore because they've been looking so good. But besides that Commanders game, the Commanders game was the first game where it's like they took a commanding lead and then give it back. But I didn't think that would happen against the Minnesota Vikings. This Detroit defense, in particular, has been taking extra kneecap soup servings when they give it out of practice because they stepped up.
Yeah.
They turned Kirk Cousins in non-primetime into primetime Kirk Cousins.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a I like the Lions, man. I really like where they're headed. I'm not going to kid you. I think they're headed down a really, really nice path here.
And even Jared Goff looks revitalized, rejuvenated, like in 2018 form.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I think a fresh start was exactly what he needed. I think he needed to go somewhere else where he felt loved and appreciated all over again. And I think he's found a renewed sense of focus in a new system, which is very much tailored to his strengths. And I mean, you've just got to give them credit, man. They're building something really special. And I only wish they were not in the same division as Da Bears.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to get sick of these Lions so quickly. It is unfathomable that this rise happened as quickly as it did.
Yeah.
But man, they're building something, and these are my Bengals.
Yeah.
If they went on a Super Bowl run this year, I can't even think of what I would do. I would be so mad if that happened so fast.
That is the feeling that you have in your gut when it happens. You know, like, of all teams, it had to be this team. Like it's one thing if like the Steelers suddenly get good, you know, or like if like Tennessee or the Patriots just go on a wild run out of nowhere. But like the Bungles, excuse me. You know, that's the thought process. But like, I do think the Lions are a bit of a ways from that per se.
History is certainly in the favor of that opinion. I was actually diving into their playoff record, and they have only passed the wild card round 3 times in the Super Bowl era.
That's
isn't that atrocious?
That's I wonder who let that one get out. I wonder who let slip that little sweetheart.
Yeah. All I know is that these Lions are looking to be something special at this point. But right now, the Vikings still won the game.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Good for those Lions and Dan Campbell, the architect of the coveted kneecap soup. Moving on to the Ravens at Patriots. This game, not going to spend a lot of time on it. Went very much according to the plan that I thought it would. I thought the Ravens defense would get gashed a bit, which they absolutely did. They should have given up 28 points. But obviously the Patriots failed on a 2-point conversion. But at the same time, the offense just continued to ball out. I mean, story of the Ravens season so far has unquestionably been their offense and just their return to prominence at a level we haven't seen really since the MVP year in 2019. I mean, they have figured it out, and they've figured it out really quickly. I mean, it usually takes them a few years to get, you know, revved up. A few years, LOL. It usually takes them a few games to get revved up.
A few years per season.
Yes. It usually takes them a couple of games to ramp up during the season, but not this year. They were firing on all cylinders really from the first half, or I'm sorry, really from the second half against the New York Jets until the present. They have just been an offensive machine. And, you know, you've got to give them a lot of credit. You've got to give Lamar a lot of credit. Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator. I mean, they marched up there into Gillette Stadium, and they really took care of business against, you know, arguably one of the greatest coaches of all time, and they made it look relatively, you know, straightforward. So,
yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, Lamar Demetrius Jackson Jr. decided that he needs to put this team on his back so that he can get the first $500 million contract in NFL history.
Specifically, the first 110% guaranteed $505 million contract in NFL history.
The total offer is actually only $450 million, but he will get $500 million guaranteed. Truly impressive, because you have to be better than Deshaun Watson at any given moment.
Yes. Deshaun Watson was guaranteed 100%. I require 101.
Well, honestly, with this performance so far, he deserves it. Much to the chagrin of your team's bankroll.
Yes, much to the chagrin of my team, who will never guarantee a player's contract fully.
I mean, to be fair, no team basically ever did that.
No team does it, but, like, again, you know, the first time, you know, when he does hit free agency, which it's looking like he will, when he does hit free agency and another team offers him that, you know, they just whip out a fully guaranteed offer right under the Ravens' butts. Are they going to stick to their guns then and let him walk? Or are they going to give him a fully guaranteed deal also? This is the question they need to be asking themselves now, so that when the time comes, they know. And they don't have to be thinking on the fly and potentially gambling with their future.
If only there was some way that they could have prevented this from happening.
Indeed. Like signing him.
Yeah, like maybe guaranteeing more than 50% of the contract.
Maybe like 60%? Or gosh forbid, more than Russell Wilson at like 67%?
Truly a mystery. We'll never know what could have potentially happened.
Yes, a beautiful mystery at that. Just an absolutely beautiful mystery. Unless, of course, you're the one paying the man. Then it's not a beautiful mystery at all.
The ugly mystery.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, the New York Jets.
Ah.
Bengals finally won a game. That's right. The Cincinnati Bengals are back.
Oh, yes. I literally just tried to think of their slogan, and I couldn't produce it. That's how not yet prominent the Bengals still are in my mind. Like, I feel like there are certain teams whose slogans you just know by heart, you know? Like,
their slogan is just a ripoff of Who Dat. It's Who Day.
Oh, that's right. It is Who Day. Okay. Yeah, I should have known that. I did know that at one time. I completely blanked on that just now. But anyway.
That's not only is it clearly connected to Who Dat, I'm going to say it's worse. Right here, I will empirically decide for myself, that it is worse than Who Dat.
What a coincidence that both franchises, one which adopted Who Dat and the other which adopted Who Day, happen to be some of the lowest self-esteem franchises in the entire sports history.
Is that really true for the Saints, though?
Oh, dude, the Saints were unbelievably god-awful before Drew Brees got there.
Fine, but that's still a large portion of their history.
Yeah, but like, you know, those things don't die easily, you know? Like, especially a chant like Who Dat, which just, like, it kind of rolls off the tongue. It's kind of, like, empowering, and it reverberates inside that you know, Mercedes-Benz Superdome, or, excuse me, that Caesars Superdome really, really well. You know, like, that's a chant that's not going to die easily. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, fair enough. In either case, though, Bengals took care of the Jets quite handedly. There's not really much else to say there, except that the Jets might finally be getting back Zach Wilson, so we'll see where this team can go moving forward. Raiders at Titans. I was gobsmacked by how – I guess I wasn't that surprised, given that I know how good Derrick Henry is, but it was more that I was surprised – that the rest of the offense was able to function so well for Tennessee. But I should have known better. As long as Derrick Henry is clicking, the Titans are clicking.
Yeah. Honestly, like, this was a really competitive game. And, like, I thought there were moments throughout where both quarterbacks showed some really, really nice flashes. Derek Carr, you know, was in magic mode toward the end of the game, as he so often is in the fourth quarter. You know, Ryan Tannehill, I thought, made some really, really, really good throws. Both these quarterbacks can sling it, man. I mean, you know, for all the grief that Tannehill gets, I mean, he can really sling the football. And, like, when he's humming and, like, that offense, like, you know, is you know, in a rhythm, he can really be a great distributor of the football. And like, I think we sometimes forget that because we lump him in with the class of guys who we like to make memes about. But, like, Tannehill's a good player, man. Like he's a really, really solid player. And, like, on any given Sunday, I can at the very least trust him to not lose the game for Tennessee. Will he always be special enough to win the game? Obviously, perhaps not. But at the same time, I've watched him beat Mahomes. I've watched him beat Josh Allen twice. I've watched him beat Lamar Jackson twice. I mean, he is an unbelievable executor of that offense. He's very comfortable in that system. And Tennessee is one of those teams that, as much as we'd like to just count them out and write them off, I don't think you're ever going to be able to count them out and write them off. I just think they're too well coached for that.
I don't want to count them out, but they lost 41-7 last week, Rob.
Yeah, but, like, that stuff happens, man. Like the Rams... The Rams literally got blown out multiple times last season. And, like, coincidentally, one of those blowouts was at the hands of the Tennessee Titans at SoFi Stadium. Like, this league is so weird. Literally every team, I feel like, can be had on any given day. I don't know if every team can be blown out, but, you know, most teams can. I mean, like, there are teams that get blown out every year and who go on to make the playoffs and sometimes even go on little runs in the playoffs. So, like, I'm not really writing them off, man. You know, even after that loss, I think their offense is underrated. I think they move the football really well. And more importantly, I think they know how to score in the red zone, which, as we were talking about earlier, is a growing theme, I think. It's a growing separator among the teams, you know, in today's league. Can you score inside the 20 consistently? And, you know, the Titans definitely have that. And I'm excited, man. Like, I'm just excited that they're back in the thick of things and that they were able to get their first win of the season. So.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, the Titans clearly do know what they're doing, and they just needed to brush off the rust. And this was a really important game for them. But it was a game that we said similarly about the Raiders, that they just needed to get their rust out of the way, and that they were so close to winning two games in a row, and now they had the Titans, a great matchup for them. But they got their butts kicked early and were just trying to catch up the rest of the game. And they couldn't do it. So now they are the only 0-3 team in this NFL.
Yeah, just a really, really unfortunate start for the Raiders. I mean, they've been in all of these games, man. Like that's just the worst. I mean, just the knowledge that you're good enough, but yet you haven't been able to close out a single one of these games. It's just unbelievable. I mean, they just, and it's so frustrating too, because I feel like they held such promise. You know, they were able to extend Max Crosby. They were able to bring in Davante Adams. I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. It's just sad. You know, you hate to see a contending team just get written off so early, you know? And like, I think at 0-3, you have to start to consider that they might just be written off, you know? I mean, it's just hard to, I don't know. It's just really, really unfortunate.
Yeah, it's definitely tough. I looked into it. Only six teams have ever made the playoffs after being down 0-3. So it's quite unlikely, particularly given that they are in the AFC. They have Davante Adams for a long time on that contract, and hopefully they try and make the most of a bad year, probably. I'm not saying – I don't know how I would say, like, teams should tank, because it's so early and this roster is good. But I generally would think that they would be better off with higher draft capital if they're not going to make the playoffs anyways. So it's just really tough to figure it out, especially because all these guys want to play their ball, play their asses off, play as hard as they can so that they can support themselves in the modern NFL to have good careers.
Yeah.
So it's tough to tank in this league.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's really tough. I mean, it's easy to tank at the ownership level, but not at all levels below that. You know, just, I mean, who wants to put their job security on the line, you know, which, like, to some extent I've never quite understood, because like, if you're only tanking if the owner wants to tank. So like, in theory, you should have the job security, right? Because like, that's literally what you're trying to do. But like, I guess that doesn't work if you're a player, because what's a player going to do? Intentionally miss a block? You know, I mean, oops, I meant to go this way. Oops, I dropped the ball.
Intentionally become a dud in the analytics. Yeah, that's not something.
Goes to catch the ball and actually flips it into the hands of the defensive back for the easy pick six.
Yeah, but no, but that's, so you have to not let it go on the quarterback. You have to catch it and then just drop it after three steps, so it's a fumble, so it only reflects poorly on you.
The rest of the team takes the fall for the quarterback.
Yes, only quarterbacks can look good. Because if we let Derek Carr look bad, that's a problem.
Derek Carr is the first quarterback in NFL history to throw for 5,000 yards and three touchdowns.
Honestly, he creates a new record of how many completions he has that follow directly into forced fumbles. Yeah, it's an absurd stat, and yeah. that's not what they're going to do at all.
No, but,
it's still an unfortunate fate for them. It'll be interesting to see how they try it.
It's like the Raiders host a press conference tomorrow. Our strategy has changed. Just tank, baby.
I mean, I feel like that's something Al Davis would say.
Yeah,
like if his team was like really in the position to tank.
Yeah,
but not Mark Davis. He's not that guy.
No, not Mark Davis indeed. Moving on to the Eagles at the Commandos. The Eagles at the Commanders. Sorry. Yeah. What a non-event this was.
So are you saying this game was not juicy?
I'm saying that, yeah. I wasn't feeling the juice with this one, unfortunately. The juices weren't flowing while this game was going on.
The Philadelphia Eagles had more sacks than the Washington Commanders had points.
I think we should just leave it there. We should just leave it there and move on.
Sounds good to me.
That was beautiful. Oh my goodness. Oh man, I love the Commanders so much, dude.
Yeah, I love them too.
I just love them I love them in such a way that I just love how much I pity them, dude.
It's truly remarkable. Jaguars and Chargers.
Yeah, and honestly, the Chargers are not far off. The Chargers are not far off from being in this camp as well.
They have the same record.
Indeed, they do. Oh, my gosh. But honestly, dude, like, Chargers get a bit of a pass, you know? Herbert's banged up. He probably was in pain just moving. The Jags are the bigger story here, I feel like. I mean, how about what Doug Peterson has done for this team basically overnight? I mean, this has been pretty incredible to watch. I'm not going to lie. You know, just the way that he's come in here after that disaster, and I mean that disaster of a regime last season, and just completely turn around the program, you know, in a span of 3 weeks and in a span of one off season, obviously. I mean, it honestly makes me think, how did this guy go all this time without getting another head coaching job? I mean, I have to think that he either declined some offers or he just wasn't interested, or he was interested, but the opportunities didn't present themselves. But whatever the case may be, I mean, I would say that he has settled unbelievably well into Jacksonville, and he's clearly connected with Trevor Lawrence. And that game wasn't competitive. The Jags, at least offensively, are humming, and defensively. Again, it's hard to attribute how much of the loss, how much of the margin of victory is on Herbert basically falling apart. But you know, either way, you've got to love where the Jags are headed after that performance. And I don't think it's a fluke.
I don't think it's a fluke either. I think there's fluke on the Chargers side of things.
Yes.
I do think it's a fluke that the Jags scored 38 points, considering that on at least three separate times, they were held to a 20-something yard field goal. Like, I've never seen a team score 38 points and have three 20-yard field goals. Like, their offense was just consistently making it into the red zone.
Yeah.
It was so impressive. And I am nervous for the Chargers after this. They lost their starting left tackle, Rashawn.
Yeah.
They lost, I mean, Jalen Guyton is a depth receiver, but you still lost another receiver to a season ending injury when Keenan Allen's out and Mike Williams is consistently inconsistent.
Yeah.
And Austin Eckler, I don't know what's happened to him, man. He caught a lot of balls, but in the running game, he had 4 carries for 5 yards. What happened? What happened to this Chargers team that I loved?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question to be asking. I mean, it's not like I think this is the end for them. You know, I mean, it you know, they could just as easily turn this puppy around, but you know, at the same time, you're not optimistic right now. If you're one of the 9 Chargers fans on the planet, you're not waking up happy today, or at the very least hopeful after the performances you just witnessed. But yeah, just a really, really, just quite frankly, an embarrassing showing. And like, if you're Brandon Staley, like, I'm sorry, but what are you doing having Justin Herbert in that game late when it literally does not matter whether he's out there or not, especially when he is in pain and he is hurting? I mean, you know, that's just boneheaded. I'm sorry, but that's just a boneheaded decision. And I mean, honestly, they're lucky he didn't get more seriously hurt than he already was. I mean, he had to be playing through so much pain on Sunday.
He really looked like it too. I the pain has definitely messed with his dropbacks and his progressions. I saw the different plays that it was messing with him. He was definitely less accurate than he was before. I think the Chargers got led into thinking because of that one DeAndre Carter pass alone, basically, in the Chiefs game, that his accuracy would still be there. And to Herbert's credit, that is still one of the best passes I've seen all season. But, yeah, the pain, he had a lot of adrenaline at the start.
Yeah. Get it together, Chargers. Get it together. Moving on to the Rams at the Cardinals. Yeah.
Sloppy, sloppy, sloppy football.
Cardinals, what's going on, man? What's going on, guys? This is starting to get a bit concerning, guys. We need to start coming up with some answers here pretty soon.
A bit. I mean, yeah, this offense seems to be non-existent unless Kyler can conjure up some magic. Ultimately, I don't really know where the disconnect is. Maybe it's just that Cliff Kingsbury is a bad coach. Maybe it's that Kyler has been pretty upset with the organization. I mean, there's plenty of signs to show why he would be. But the Rams' defense didn't play phenomenally, and neither did their offense. But they won, and a win is an important win in this division with this NFC West Thunderdome. So, yeah, I don't know what the what the Cardinals have to do to fix their problems, but boy, do a lot of things need to be fixed. And certainly it will not be resolved simply by getting DeAndre Hopkins back.
Yeah, no, this isn't a function of simply getting a player back. This is just institutional chaos. And like, you know, I do give the Rams credit, you know, divisional game on the road, not an easy environment to be playing in. You know, they know how to win ugly. I give the Rams credit. They, for all of our talk about what a, you know, pretty finesse team they are, they know how to win ugly.
That is the Stafford specialty, winning ugly.
They know how to win sloppily. I heard on another talk show a couple of days ago that with Matt Stafford, you get both the penthouse and the outhouse. And I have to say that never have I heard a more apt description of Matt Stafford's complete package of play. You will undoubtedly get his best moments, and you will undoubtedly get his worst moments, and you will get a very nice helping of both, you know, over a large enough sample size. But, you know, the Rams, they took care of business. They did what they had to do. I think it's pretty clear that Arizona, we all need to take a deep breath on them, reset our expectations. They're not the team we thought they were going to be. But at the same time, whenever you can get a win in division, that's a pretty big win, especially on the road. So, well done, Rams.
Yeah. Moving on, Falcons at Seahawks. And for the most part, this is just one of those I don't like calling it garbage bowls because, you know, both teams are full of high-quality talent, some more talented than others. And this was a competitive game.
Yeah.
The Falcons and Seahawks, even though they might not be great against other NFL teams, they definitely played well against each other. And it was one of the higher scoring games of this week.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Falcons came to play. I mean, I'm always consistently impressed when an East Coast team goes west and plays well.
Particularly at Lumen Field.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's a long trip, too. I mean, Atlanta to Seattle, that's a long flight.
And then you get confronted immediately by the 12th man.
Yeah. Yes, the 12th man is literally waiting for you at the airport.
Good for Marcus Mariota, man.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he has risen to the occasion. And I've got to give him his props. I've got to give him his props. They have... But you know, the other thing is, if you're the Falcons, you know, they have leaned so fully and unabashedly into what he is. They have leaned fully into his, you know, ability to execute the read option and his talent as a dual threat. And, I mean, it's working. It's working for them. I don't know if it's working for them from a tanking perspective, but it is working for them.
Well, they still are only 1-2. They're allowed to have a few wins along the way. It's okay.
Mm.
And I think what's still most interesting is how time and time again, Cordarrelle Patterson has looked amazing, considering that his career was like non-existent as an offensive personnel before his time in Atlanta. Arthur Smith has really unlocked him, and I don't know what it is, but there is definitely congratulations to be given out to the Smith organization.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Packers at Buccaneers. Congratulations, Packers, on beating the Tampa Bay Buccaneers without four offensive linemen and without their top three wide receivers by barely holding off a two-point conversion on the last play of the game to win 14. After a delay of game penalty to win 14-12. Congratulations, Green Bay Packers. Congratulations.
This is the bullshit that leads to why the Packers always have 13 wins a season. It's really what it is. Because I've never seen a team get so many more heapings of favorable bullshit than the Packers. Granted, I am obviously looking for it. Boy, is that bullshit smelly. I don't think I'd have to look that hard to find it.
Yeah, no, I don't think the list of teams is very long. I don't think the Packers are competing with a company of many others in that department. I really don't. I mean it's just how? I mean, you know, it must be all the cheese, man. It must be all the cheese that they eat.
All the cheese. That's what it is. The NFL only hires referees with lactose addictions. Therefore, it must necessarily support the Green Bay Packers in their endeavors. Otherwise, they get shut out from the world's greatest Gouda.
Yes, obviously what is going on.
You seen the meme with the referee doing the Lambo leap?
Yeah, literally after they win on the final play of the game by 1 point. Oh my goodness, just unbelievable optics. Just admirable, exemplary optics in a football game, you know?
Optics aside, though, you know, obviously the Packers are awful that it had to come down to this, but they did win, and a win is a win. And there is two major positives for them, unfortunately for me, moving forward. Rodgers trusts Romeo Dobbs now. And now that he trusts a rookie, I'm sure this guy is going to become the next Davante Adams, because that's clearly the way the Packers think always fucking works.
Oh my gosh, man. Oh my gosh.
The thing is that David Bakhtiari is back, at least on a pitch count.
Quality content within that discussion. 49ers at Broncos. Before everyone blasts this game, and more specifically, before everyone decides to put both the Denver offense and Jimmy Garoppolo on blast, I'm just going to put this out there because no one else is going to say this. If you are a Denver Broncos fan and you were in attendance at that game, I'm sorry, but you will remember that finish as one of the very best finishes you ever witnessed as a fan. The last 5% of that game made the first 95% worthwhile. That was one of the most unbelievably exciting finishes, or rather, unbelievably exciting finishing sequences and unpredictable finishes that I think I've ever seen in a football game. That was just such a beautiful shit show. I just can't, it just tickles me inside. Just what a beautiful mess that game was, especially in the ending, you know, during the closing minutes. Russell Wilson finally puts the team on his back, finds that inner Russ magic, channels his inner Danger Russ, moves them down the field, hands it off to Melvin Gordon for the 1 yard score. The 49ers promptly throw it back to the Broncos, courtesy of a Jimmy G interception. Broncos go 3-and-out, punt the ball back to the Niners, and Jimmy Garoppolo hits, I believe it was Kittle, or it might have been somebody else over the middle, They fumble the ball, Broncos fall on it, and that's ball game. Just an unbelievably wild finish. I got so excited by the way that game ended, despite the way the first 95% of it went. And that's the kind of game that if you're a Broncos fan, you're just happy to escape with the win and move on.
They literally only won on a safety because Jimmy G just happened to step out of the end zone.
No. He didn't just happen to step out of the end zone. He was trying to squash racism.
Honestly, that might be the case. That or Dan Orlovsky paid him millions of dollars to finally have someone else other than him walk out of that end zone.
He waited 28 years. He waited 28 years to find the guy to do it. I'm just kidding. It hasn't been 28 years, everyone. But it's been a long time. It's been a good long time.
I mean, he was a backup for Stafford, so it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, it wasn't anywhere near 28 years. LOL.
Yeah, Jimmy G didn't look great in that performance, to say the least. And I'm surprised. I thought the 49ers offense would move better. But maybe this clearly shows why they were probably leaning on Lance and hoping to move past Pretty Boy.
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan's beard looked a little gray in that game. I'm not going to lie. That was the grayest I think I've seen his beard in all the times I've been watching Kyle Shanahan. And I think I even posted that in our Survivor Discord. That man, it is clear the effects of watching Jimmy G or whichever scrub is currently replacing Jimmy G at that moment, quarterback your team, really has an effect on you as a head coach. And I suppose I didn't really appreciate that until I saw Kyle Shanahan's beard color upon this night.
Spoke volumes.
Indeed, it's probably even grayer now than it was on Monday night. But anyway, congratulations to the Broncos and 49ers, I think, are going to be fine when all is said and done. So,
yeah.
Moving on to our final game of this beautifully juicy, defensive-leaning Week 3 slate, the Cowboys at the Giants.
Cooper Rush is undefeated.
Yes.
Cooper Rush is undefeated.
He's literally undefeated in his NFL career as a starter.
He has beaten one, a team that went to the Super Bowl, and two, a team that was undefeated prior to this game at their stadium, and it's a divisional game. What a remarkable career.
Yeah. Yeah. He should just call it quits now. I mean, you know, easily a Hall of Famer at this point.
He's desperately hoping Dak can come back from that injury soon so that his career could end on this high note.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I love it. Such good content here on the pod. Yeah.
Who else is good content though? Daniel Jones. He played as well as probably any person could have played in the position that the Cowboys front seven and the Giants O-line put him in.
Oh my gosh, dude, that man is just getting killed out there. I mean, like, if you're the Giants, like, it should not be this difficult for you to field a functional offensive line. I'm sorry, but it's been 3 years. It's been 4 years. It's been 4 years since you had a respectable offensive line. What are you guys doing up there? I mean, I know you just got a regime change. And so in that regard, I get it. The new guy probably wants to undo everything the old guy did.
I mean, similarly, they just drafted a new tackle in Evan Neal, so he's very unproven.
Which, he's unproven, but I would argue he's actually been pretty – I'd argue he's been pretty solid, and he's probably the only solid addition on their offensive line at the moment. But, I mean, golly, they're just so consistently awful. And, I mean, Daniel Jones, like – you said it yourself. How are we supposed to evaluate the man? I mean, there are guys in the backfield 2 seconds into the play on every other play. You know, I mean, how much is he supposed to do? I just feel so bad writing him off when it's clear he does not have a viable supporting cast with which to work with, even still. And in spite of that, he still made plays down the field. He still made plays in crunch time.
I definitely think that Daniel Jones has done enough that, I mean, he's not, I don't think, I don't know. I don't think he'll re-sign with the Giants unless they figure out a lot by the end of the season to continue making him look good. But I think enough teams will see the potential in him. He's shown enough in his career so far. But yeah, it was just a rough outing for, it was a rough outing for the Cowboys till near the end, not near the end, but definitely first half was rough. But CeeDee Lamb finally, CeeDee Lamb had a phenomenal game. And the Cooper Rush connection got established when it was pretty much originally exclusively belonging to Noah Brown. But yeah, Cooper fits into that offense now. So almost, it's not that he's better than Dak, but he has been a much more capable replacement than anyone, myself included, ever gave him credit for.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And with that,
I guess that's the end. I don't have any other takeaways, but I still think this Giants team, as bad as they were, are going to beat the Bears next week.
I guess we'll just have to find out. And more on that on the next episode of Hitch Wrap.
All right. Peace out, everyone.
All right. Catch you guys later.